Welcome to Coast to Cast, a podcast on coastal science where we meet scientists and ask questions that don't usually appear in published papers. While we are all in different ways trapped by the COVID pandemic, although we're starting to come out of it, we hope to give the chance to students and whoever is interested to meet scientists and hear curious and less curious questions. My name is Ana Vila Concejo, and today I'm meeting Shari Gallop. Shari is a proud Maori woman and a senior lecturer at the University of Waikato. Her research expands estuaries and beaches, and she has developed her research in New Zealand, Australia, and the UK. Shari is a great advocate for equity and diversity in the geosciences and in life in general. Kia ora, Shari. How are you?
Kia ora. I'm really good, thanks. A little bit nervous for today, but also really excited.
I think you will be fine. So before we start, just the question that we're asking all of our guests now is, like, we are really, truly living weird times. I know that New Zealand and Australia are doing much better than other parts of the world, but we have closed borders. How are you and your family, and how are you coping?
We're really good. I'm really grateful for the situation that we have here. Sometimes you're slightly guilty about it, you know, just seeing what's happening everywhere else and talking to family and friends overseas. But yeah, we've been really blessed, and my family's doing well. And yeah, I just really hope that very soon, sooner rather than later, we can see an end to this pandemic.
Yes, I hope so too. Okay, so as you know, the format of this podcast is a conversation around a set of more or less fixed questions. We sometimes change them. And the objective is to keep it around half an hour. So I think we should start. What do you think?
Sounds good.
Okay. So the first question is, how did you start in coastal science?
Thinking about this, I always really loved the water. So as a kid, we had a very kind of outdoorsy childhood. And I used to just love going to the rivers and our lakes and also the sea. I always loved rocks and sticks and sand and shells and stuff like that. At school, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I knew I liked science, and I also had some really encouraging teachers that I think was really helpful. So I just started a science degree, and I thought I would do something in chemistry, but I really hated it. But I found I really enjoyed earth sciences, and I guess I just kept picking subjects I like and just kind of naturally ended up in marine science. And also looking back, for me in my kind of research journey, you know, my first taste of real research was doing a master's project, and that was with Professor Karen Bryan. And looking back, having her as a kind of mentor from so early on was really important for my career. And since then, she's been one of my greatest supporters and also colleagues. So thanks, Karen.
That's great. I'm sure that Karen is one of our listeners, so that's good. Okay. How did you balance your life commitments, your personal life, your work life? Did you balance them at all?
That is a really hard question. I don't think I am that good at it. I haven't heard anyone say that they're good at it, actually. I find it particularly hard, you know, when you're passionate about your work, but you're also passionate about things outside of your work, which could be your family or whatever it is. So sort of trying to realign my thoughts and not think of it so much as a balance, because for me that makes me just picture those old school scales, and I picture one thing kind of fighting against the other, which for me is not a helpful analogy. So I'm trying to reimagine it as something that's more kind of integrated. I recently read an article that was called Reconciling Instead of Balancing, Reconciling Our Work and Family, so you don't have to see them as kind of opposite ends of a spectrum. So I'm still working on how to actually implement that. I don't normally find it very easy to switch off from work, but I'm working on being better planned and focused when I am working, which is making it a little bit easier to switch off when I'm not. I think because I kind of feel like, you know, I set out to do these tasks, I did them, and now I can stop and be with my family or whatever it is. So I don't find it easy, but I'm trying to be more protective of my time and energy, more protective of what I say yes to, because if I say yes to too many things, it cuts into my personal and my family time. I did fall off the bandwagon of that for a while, and I paid for that, but now I'm focusing on, you know, getting back on that. Not checking emails in the evenings where possible, and weekends as well is a big thing. So it was a bit of a long answer, but that's how I feel about it.
Yes. Yes. No, it's a good answer. I once went to one of these events, and the person presenting was saying, like, well, there is only one life, so you need to fit it all. It's not about balancing. It's about living your life in the way that works for you and your family. So, yeah, it's not easy. No. So outside from work, what are your interests or hobbies? What do you like to do when you're not working?
Yeah, I guess most of my time I try and spend with my husband and my kids. My son just turned 7 and my daughter turns 4 tomorrow, so they keep me pretty busy. I love doing things at home. I love cooking and baking when I have time to do that, and I'm a bit of a bookworm as well. And I'm also doing night and sometimes weekend classes and a kind of beginner's Te Reo Māori, so Māori language course as well, which I'm actually really, really enjoying. And it's quite cool to be the student rather than the teacher as well for once.
Sounds great. And the next question is, I'm sure you have a good answer for this one, because it is, what would you change in our area of research to make it a better place?
I thought about lots and lots of different things that I could say to this one, but I guess I was reflecting on kind of academia in general, and I think of it that sometimes it can be kind of a toxic machine to be a part of. You know, you've got kind of always increasing expectations of your outputs. Whatever you do, you're always expected to kind of do more and more and more. You're kind of expected to do everything and do all of those things with excellence. So whether that's your research, you know, publishing papers, bringing in money, also your community relations, your teaching, your pastoral care, your outreach and your media engagement. That's a whole lot of stuff. I'm sure there's more. So I don't know how to change that system as a whole, but for me, I'm trying to do my part of not kind of buying into it as much and trying to focus on doing less, but doing it better and enjoying it more. So that also means being more strategic about what I want to do and saying no to most of the things that don't align with that. And I actually think my output probably is slowed a little bit with this change, but I think I feel okay with it, at least at the moment. Maybe ask me later if that pays off. So I think it's hard to fight against that kind of academic machine and that bigger culture, but I think that each of us can all take responsibility for our part, because we can choose, you know, we have to follow it to an extent, but we can choose how much we feed into it, and, you know, constantly trying to perform to reach those unrealistic expectations is not good for anybody.
Yeah, I agree. I often say that I feel like one of these one person's orchestras, you know, like with the drum at the back and the trumpet and the harmonic and everything else, the maracas.
Mm. Yeah, it's like that.
Yeah. So the next question is about your favorite paper. Is there a favorite paper or a paper that changed your life or your research direction?
There's lots of cool papers over the years, but more recent example was actually a book, and it's by someone called Linda Smith, who's at the University of Waikato as well, and it's called Decolonizing Methodologies. And one of the quotes that kind of sticks with me and kind of epitomizes what this book is about is where it says, the word research is probably the dirtiest word in Indigenous people's vocabularies, including because of the role of Western science and colonialism. So that book is really powerful, and it's not a book you kind of read once or put down. You can kind of keep going back to it, and it's kind of caused and causing me to rethink my approach to science a bit, and how I work, you know, in my local environments, and think more about the how I go about my research rather than just the outputs. Because I think that as Western scientists, we're kind of trained to be very outcome and output focused, whether it's to, you know, answer that question, get those data, get that model going, whatever it is. And I think that the way and the how we do our research is not so much talked about, but I think just as, if not more important, particularly when you come to working with communities, especially Indigenous communities, and the places they live, and also the data surrounding that as well.
Yep, interesting. And can you briefly explain one of your topics of research to our listeners?
So one of the things I'm looking at the moment is the science of restoring estuaries and really focusing on returning freshwater flows after they have been taken away. So I'm quite interested in the kind of theory behind this. So for example, if we have an estuary that's in a kind of healthy state, and if it's been degraded to some unhealthy state, such as if you apply a certain pressure, which might be in our case, if you remove the freshwater from a river, if you divert it or something, and how can we predict the hoped for recovery path? What will that look like? And what will the new state look like? Because we may not be able to get back to what it was before, but can we get somewhere in the middle, and how do we get there? So I'm kind of looking at a combination of theoretical modeling and also combining that with process-based modeling and field measurements. So I'm largely focusing on one of the local sites here, just down the road from where I am, the Makatu Estuary, where about 20% of the major river has just been put back after the whole river was basically moved out in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any surprising findings from the research so far?
Still early days, been working there for a year or two, but we've got now a couple of really good field seasons of data. So we're going through that at the moment, and I have a PhD student working on that too. So watch this space.
Excellent. And Shari, you have done a lot of field work. What are the wildest field conditions that you have encountered?
I love field work stories. So the first one that came to mind for me was during my PhD. This was in Perth in Western Australia. And we had a team of us, and we were out during the first kind of major winter storm of the year to look at the storm response of a beach. So we were doing hourly measurements around the clock. I think it was for 5 or 6 days. And one time it was in the middle of the night, so we're tired. We've been doing shifts and not sleeping very well. It was really dark. And we had all these metal rods stuck in the profiles down the beach in a row. And we were measuring the height of the rods. And so you had to kind of dodge the waves coming in, which were by that point cutting right into the dune. There was also lots of lightning, and we're like on a wet beach with all these metal rods sticking up. It wasn't very great. And there were all these wooden pallets, like shipping pallets in the swash. I don't know where they came from. They must have been washed up somewhere during the storm. There were heaps of them coming in and out with every single wave as well, like ankle breakers. So it was a bit ridiculous. It was such a stupid situation. We were all just like, you know, overtired and thought it was hilarious at the time, but it was actually kind of dangerous. We didn't put that in our H&S plan, but we got some good data out of it.
That's excellent. And following up on that question, what is the strangest thing that you have seen at the coast?
It's not that strange, but it's kind of cool. Also, when I was living in Perth, and there was a time when there was a whole cluster of shark kind of attacks. And so we live quite close to the beach, and they used to have a shark siren. So it'd be really hot, and you'd kind of be ready to walk down to the beach, and the siren would come on. You'd be like, oh, so you couldn't go swimming. And they used to have this helicopter where it just fly up and down the coast every day looking for sharks. Anyway, one day I was walking on the beach, and I just saw some weird stuff in the water and went over to have a look. And I counted them. There was 13 tiger sharks, all thrashing around, like right in the swash zone, you know, knee depth or less water over a dolphin carcass. So that was interesting.
Very interesting indeed. Okay, going back to serious science, or more serious science, do you think that we can predict long-term morphodynamic changes beyond decadal scales?
I think we're always getting better at it, but I think in general, with any level of certainty, I would say no, just because nature is so variable on so many scales. And also, obviously, the forcing's really variable and quite uncertain as well. So even if we could, you know, with some accuracy and make the predictions, if you take into account the uncertainties of the weather and the climate, I think it's a kind of impossible task. Some of the modelers might disagree with me, but anyway.
Anyway, okay, I'm thinking forward. What do you think will be the major advance in coastal science that will happen in the next 50 years?
And I was thinking about this as well. There was a well-known, it's called a whakatauki, which means like a saying or kind of a proverb in Te Reo Māori, which is kia whakatō muri te haere whakamua, which means I walk backwards into the future with my eyes fixed on the past. And I was thinking about how here in Aotearoa New Zealand, we're seeing this kind of shift in the way that science is being done with mātauranga Māori, which is intergenerational Māori knowledge being more integrated. And this is happening in lots of other places as well. And this knowledge goes back hundreds and thousands of years and is becoming more accepted and sought out in the science world. So we're certainly seeing that here. There hasn't been much done in the coastal science space that we work on this, but I think there's still a lot that we can learn by bridging our knowledge systems. So people that have been Indigenous peoples living in places for many, many, many generations have a very intimate knowledge of the system. They know how to live in harmony in that environment without overexploitation. And they also have a really long memory, often it's passed down orally, of how things have changed or haven't changed in the past. And I think that inherently in this knowledge is also lots of really valuable information about cumulative effects and short versus long-term changes as well. So I'm hoping that in the coming years and decades, we're going to see more transdisciplinary coastal research in this space.
I hope so. I mean, as someone living in Australia and an Australian, I can only feel envy of how far you have taken it in New Zealand. I hope we catch up one day. Okay. The next question is about other contributions. So which other contributions to society do you do through your work? Do you do mentoring, outreach? Is there something there?
Yeah, I really love doing this side of things. I love talking to people about science. So one example, I've been involved with a program up in Northland, and that's with one of my iwi on my mum's side, which is called Te Rarua. And I went to the first one of these in January of this year, and it's a wānanga. So that kind of means sort of like a conference, but it's more kind of about knowledge generation. And this is about connecting the youth of Te Rarua to science and really place-based in their local environment. So I got to go along to that and run some activities. My husband and kids came too, so it was very busy, but really awesome. So I really love doing programs like that. And also I'm getting more and more involved in the community and some of my work, like the estuary I was talking about before, we have moved the river. So, I've been involved with some stuff with the school or the kura, the work for school, running some science programs for them. I was just there earlier this week hearing some of the students talk about their findings. They all did a project on the ocean on things like, microplastics and whales and sharing their knowledge with us. So that's just some of the things, but I find it really rewarding. I just have to be careful not to do way too much of it.
Yeah, it sounds great. And finally, the last question is what was the best or the worst advice that you have ever received, or what would you say to your former self?
I think the best advice was that once I heard someone say, a very senior academic, she said that we have a lot of freedom in our career to define our own path. And she said, be careful and intentional about choosing yours, or somebody will do it for you. And that really stuck with me. I heard that a few years ago now. And since then, I've kind of been working, it's not an overnight thing, but to kind of get on track to where I want to be. And the worst, which could also be the best, the worst is to say yes to everything. That was good for a little while and a lot of opportunities opened up because of it. But then I found myself saying way too many yeses. So now I've been relearning how to say no. So yes can be good, but saying no is also good.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right there. So Shari, before going to our final quick questions, is there something that you would like to say that you haven't had a chance to say?
I just think it's awesome that you're doing these podcasts. I've listened to a couple already and I really enjoyed them, and it was really nice just learning a bit more about some of the journeys that your fellow coastal scientists have been on. So thank you for doing this.
Oh, thank you. I feel flattered. Okay, now our final quick questions to wrap up. Just don't think too much. Just the first thing that comes to your head. Yeah?
Yeah.
So favorite band, music, or composer?
I don't have one, and I just kind of listen to everything. That's the answer.
Easy. Okay, favorite dish or signature dish?
I'm a real sucker for a really good pizza. It's all about the base.
I think Giovanni might like that one. Yeah. Latest book you have read?
I'm reading one right now, and it's called Walking the Space Between Identity and Māori Pākehā, which I'm enjoyed by Melinda Weber.
Okay. The weirdest thing on your desk right now?
Probably just some bags of sour lollies. So not that weird, but yum.
Favorite movie?
I really love that movie Hook. That's that spin-off of Peter Pan. It's got Robin Williams in it. I can just watch it over and over again.
Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Thank you very much, Shari. It's been great having you in Coast to Coast.
Thank you.